everybody, and welcome to Tales from the Fog. I'm your host, Casey, and with me, as always, is the amazing and wonderful Veronica. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. It's good to be back.
Yeah, took a nice little holiday break.
We did. It was pretty necessary. I mean, we could have, like, kind of shoved an episode in somewhere, but it would have been hasty and like, even more so than normal.
Yeah.
So it just... we didn't have a lot to talk about, and there were so many other things going on that it made sense to just let the holidays happen and, you know, pick up when we were ready.
Yeah.
So I think we're pretty ready.
I think so.
Yeah.
So, anything new going on with you?
So nothing is really new. I've got to do some pretty fun things in this past month. Our Decade Brigade rookie, who I guess is no longer a rookie since
he
started...
we're still in the opening.
Oh, I thought you were talking about fun things that we did. That was a fun thing we did.
No, we're still chatting.
Oh, well then no, nothing fun.
Opening montage.
Montage. It's a montage. No, nothing really. Just recovering from the holidays, stepping on Legos, doing laundry. That's it. I don't lead an existing life.
Been
really.
Rock climbing.
Oh, we did go rock climbing. That is exciting, I guess. Yeah. It was so long ago. Less than a week ago. You know my brain doesn't go that far back. Yeah, so for, I guess we'll call it a Christmas present. There was a discount at Hangar 18 for monthly memberships, so I signed us up, and we've been doing a lot of rock climbing lately.
Yeah,
it's been pretty fun. Yeah, it's interesting to be so sore after doing something that doesn't seem like very much, because all you're doing is basically being a little kid and playing on the monkey bars, but your body does not respond like that. Your body thinks that you just tried to scale a mountain and now is going to punish you for it.
Yeah.
And you're hurt for days and your hands like are all crampy and they develop this weird skin like when you used to play on the monkey bars. Do you ever, I don't, maybe it was a girl thing. There are some guys who did it, but you like, there's the horizontal bar of varying heights, and I think they're meant for just doing pull-ups and stuff, or like basic,
like do the flips and stuff.
Yeah, that's what we would do. We would tie one of our sweaters around the bar and then hook a knee over it and do what adults now call calisthenics. We called it recess. And you just like, you hook a knee over and you like flip over the bar and stuff, but your hands are on the bars constantly and they're like they get really callousy and sore. But there were flashbacks of those days where my hands got super thick and crunchy, mm-hmm. and it was because of all the rock climbing we'd been doing. And, you know, you don't really get the same feeling doing pull-ups in the bedroom on our little campus board, because it's the same position all the time, and you just, like, you pull yourself up, and then you let yourself down, and that's it. But, like, at the gym, you're twisting, and you're hanging on with one hand, and all this, like, weird body contortion stuff that really does a number on your old bones.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. You've improved so much at the gym. It's crazy watching
it's
you go.
It's fun.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't feel like I'm progressing a lot. Every time I watch you, you're doing more and more advanced routes. Like, just going up the rock. Like, oh my god! Your body really likes this kind of thing, it seems.
Well, I think it's just muscle memory coming back because, you know, I used to do it a lot in my younger days. And so now it's just kind of slowly coming back to me.
Yeah. Stuff, you know what? That's a weird phenomenon. Stuff like that does stick with you. When I took Xander ice skating, the stuff came back pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Things that I didn't think... whatever come back. Like, I didn't think I'd be jumping anywhere anytime soon. By the end of that one trip, I was doing, like, you know, simple jumps and you know, little toe flips and things like that. So things stick with you, even though you think they are long gone.
Yeah.
What's new with you, man?
Well, been working the new job, getting used to the hours, which I think is okay. I mean, it's just a different kind of existence, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just kind of getting used to it and figuring out where family time fits in, where sleeping time fits in, and all that stuff, because, you know.
Yeah. At first, it felt surreal, almost, because I felt like I saw you, but I didn't really see you because I only saw you for a couple hours in between your sleep cycles.
Yeah.
And you'd be at work while I was sleeping, and then you'd come home from work, but I would have left for work already, and the whole thing felt very Twilight Zone-y. Like, nothing felt real, and I was wondering, how long can we keep this up? Because nothing feels normal. But it's been about a month, and it's starting to feel normal again. Maybe it's just establishing that rhythm.
Maybe, yeah.
Like, at first I felt like a single mom, which I wasn't because you helped me tremendously, but being awake and with Xander, like, by ourselves, neither of us are responsible. And we're like, well, who's making dinner? Who's telling who to go to bed? You know, it was a very bizarre feeling for me, but now having done it for a while, I feel more in touch with the timing, and I'm able to appreciate the time that we do have awake together, and things feel a little bit more efficient.
Yeah.
So it's less alien. It's still a little weird, but at least we know when we could fit fun stuff in as
and
a family.
It helps because right now, the route that I'm doing, I can go in later, and I still get home earlier.
Yeah.
So I can get in my afternoon sleep before you even get home, and then we have the whole evening to hang out.
That's when it feels like a little bit more normal.
Yeah.
We can have dinner together, we can watch TV, play video games, you know, actually spend some time together as a family, and then you have to retire to go basically take a nap before you go into work, but you would only be going to bed a couple hours later anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not horrible.
Yeah.
But Xander has been going to bed way too late because I have no sense of time. I look up and it's 9 o'clock. I'm like, oh my God, I need to go to bed. Meanwhile, the both of us are up watching Chowder. And yeah, still some steps to make towards being a good grown-up.
And let's see. Besides that, I have kind of given myself 2 new writing projects.
Oh, so excited for that.
And then we have something that we're kind of in pre-production on, sort of, kind of. And then I'm sure we're going to be starting the meetings for Decade Brigade here at the beginning of the year.
From what I hear, it will be after the new year.
Yeah.
So somewhere at the top of January.
Yeah. So combine that with everything, it's going to be getting very, very busy.
2019 is going to be the year of making it happen.
Yeah.
Really. In a lot of ways. We're putting a lot of, what do they call it? Pokers in the fire? A lot of irons in the fire? A lot of, I don't know, eggs in the basket?
A lot of coal in the fire?
Sure. I don't know what it's called.
A lot of fire in the fire.
I think it's irons in the fire. I don't know. I should have thought that one through. But we have a lot of stuff going on, and it's all in the creative production stuff that we love so much, and it's going to be a fun year.
Yeah.
So, what's in the news, or what's fun that you would like to talk about?
Well, now we can talk about the thing that you were so gung-ho.
Now we can
talk
about the thing? Okay.
Yeah.
So, Jesse, one of our newest members in the Decade Brigade, is, along with being a very talented monster and slider, he is also a mask maker, and he's made a couple of pieces for other talent at Scary Farm and for himself, but he hadn't ventured into the world of prosthetic pieces yet. So when Larry Bones announced that he was going to have a class, Jesse jumped on that. So he was part of a very small group, a very fortunate group of people who got to study under the legendary Larry Bones. And in their class, they went through sculpting and, like, you know, concept, and then sculpting, and then casting, and then finally application. So on their very last day of class, he asked me to come in and model for the piece that he had sculpted as part of this class. And that was a really exciting thing to be a part of. One thing, to get to see Larry Bones again is always nice. Getting to see his facility is fun. And then getting to see all these other artists and all these other perspectives, like, no two pieces were alike at all. And I don't know if they planned it that way, but, like, different time periods, different species, different, you know, themes. Like every single one of them was completely different. No two could have existed in the same story.
Yeah, they're awesome. I think you can see them on Boneyard Effects Instagram.
Yep, he posted everything. He shot us on a green screen when we were all done so he can put in his classic Larry Bones backdrops that he makes. So it was such a lovely experience to see. Like, I kind of assumed that Jesse had already done that kind of thing because he's so knowledgeable about, like, that kind of stuff. Like, with the painting and textures on the pieces and everything. I didn't realize he hadn't made prosthetics before. And by the condition and the quality of the piece that he put on me, I would not have guessed that was his first ever prosthetic piece. It was amazing.
Well, and he also had Larry Bones helping, so that's always a good
when you're being tutor. Taught by a master, that's also very helpful. But I mean, for your first one ever, there sculpting is hard. Like, it's one thing to draw a 2D thing, but to make it 3D and put it on somebody, like, that's so beyond what I can wrap my head around. And it looked amazing. What was funny, though, is once the piece went on me, I thought I looked like Jesse.
Yeah.
Because you do kind of sculpt what you're the most familiar with, right? So you sculpt things that inadvertently look like you. Like, I would think that that's a common thing to do. But the way that he designs his own masks, he put that same aesthetic into the prosthetic. So when he put it on me in the mirror, like, that's what I thought I looked like. I thought I looked like a Jesse piece.
That's funny.
So his signature is already there. Like, his style and his aesthetic is distinguishable, and I thought he did a great job. We had so much fun. The costume piece he had made for something else, but it happened to fit me because, I mean, Jesse's like tiny and I'm gigantic, so the stuff that he made for him fit me. It was great. We had such a good time, so many laughs, so many, like, it was nice because we don't get to talk to him very often. We don't live close by. He's someone we haven't really gotten to connect with.
Yeah, not in a long time because we just kind of see him in passing here and there.
And usually we're working. Yeah. We're doing Decay Brigade stuff. So to just sit and shoot the shit with him we were there for like 4 hours. It was so awesome. It was just wonderful to see him. And then I got to see, crap, I'm so bad at pulling names out of my files. What's this, Courtney? No offense, Courtney. I'm just really bad at pulling files out. But she was there towards the end to pick him up and help him close up shop and everything.
That's cool.
It was so wonderful. And it's down the street from the Ninja Gym, which has nothing to do with anything. They're just geographically close.
Down the street from Immortal Mask.
Yeah.
So that area is kind of turning into like a hub of sculpting and fun.
Yeah. Yeah, the Immortal Masks place is precisely across the street from the Ninja Gym.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And about 3/4 of a mile away is Larry Bones' place. A hub of creativity.
Pretty close to that is Thingergy.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's just where they go. That's the cool place to make stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
Neat. So yeah, that was a very fun thing to do. What else you got?
Well, the time has come to talk about time travel.
Ooh.
Our favorite subject of films and maybe documentaries of some kind.
Documentaries. As far as like interdimensional time travel string theory wormhole type stuff?
Quantum mechanics.
Yeah. Yeah, we like that stuff.
Yeah, good stuff.
All right.
So a supposed time traveler has come out with a documentary, and
the time traveler himself,
yes,
is the producer of the documentary.
Yes.
Okay.
And he goes by Noah the Time Traveler. He doesn't want to give his real name.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
But he supposedly has proof of his time travels via photos and magazines and newspapers from the future.
Because no one could manufacture those things.
No.
Okay.
It's absolutely impossible to do that. Anyway, he came out with a documentary that, among other things, gave several predictions for the year 2019. And I thought, since this is the end of the year, we can see what we have to look forward to from a time traveler himself.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be exciting.
Oh, I can't wait.
All right. So He predicts that starting in January of 2019, all right, just next month, several mass UFO sightings will occur for many years, actually, and it'll culminate in August of 2028, mm-hmm, when a large UFO is going to crash near a major metropolitan area. The aliens are going to come down and and meet with the humans, and they're going to help us create a single worldwide government.
Wow.
Yeah, so 2028 is that.
That's fantastic. So, okay.
He also said that he actually named the planet that the aliens come from. It's Lewis 383 or something like that.
Lewis?
Yeah, it's the name of the planet. Lewis 383 or something.
Okay.
And supposedly has a nitrogen atmosphere like the Earth, but slightly thicker, like more nitrogen in it, but similar to Earth, I guess.
All right.
So that's January, so be on the lookout for UFOs next month, I guess, guys.
I guess I'll have to. I mean, aren't mass UFO sightings common constantly?
Well, I think what he's seeing is, he's not saying, like, someone sees a UFO. He's talking about mass UFO sightings. So we're talking, like, the Phoenix Lights, where thousands of people mm-hmm. see it at one time. And these are going to be, like, major, large-scale crafts, not, like, little lights. Like, you're going to see some shit.
So the civilians are going to see them with their naked eyes?
Yes.
Things that the technology we have floating above us constantly wouldn't have already detected and told us about?
I guess so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify, I guess. Great. What else does he have to say?
In February of 2019, so...
next month.
Next month. The United States is going to be hit with the worst winter storm in its history, from the West Coast to the Midwest, completely wiping out some towns.
Okay. I was on board with plausible until the wiping out of some towns, but I guess, aren't there, like, teeny tiny little towns in, like, New Mexico?
Yeah.
That could, like, if it's a village of 10 houses and those 10 houses get wiped out, then it did wipe out an entire town?
Yeah, technically.
So that one is somewhat plausible?
I guess, yeah. And, you know, the Midwest does have really bad snowstorms, so...
And we get really bad storms. Yeah. Do we usually get really bad storms in the winter?
Aren't usually like a fall, spring kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking like El Nino type. Mm-hmm. But isn't that in like April?
But we'll see. It's been quite cold lately.
It has. I will be excited if it snows here in Orange County. I mean, we're not in Orange County, but like I want it to snow in and around Orange County.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Now we're going to scoot ahead to April of 2019.
Okay.
Where he says a robotic eye is going to be approved for human use, nearly curing blindness forever.
That also sounds plausible. Isn't that technology that's been in the works for a really long time?
Like being able to connect up like cameras to various synapses that go to the brain.
Yeah. Yeah, trying to identify exactly what causes what to register as sight.
Yeah.
And then replicate that with a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
So that's mine.
Sure.
And then in June of 2019, he says that a doctor or a scientist is going to use the CRISPR gene therapy to help a paralyzed person to completely heal and be able to walk again.
Did you hear the story about the doctor who already did use CRISPR technology
on the subject? On the babies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now the doctor's nowhere to be found?
Yes.
That's crazy.
I know. It's nuts.
So
CRISPR is an interesting, I mean, it's an amazing technology. Whether it's going to actually work for anything that we want it to is to be seen, because a lot of times there's a lot of conflicting information. So there's one study that came out that said they did some gene editing and not only did it edit the genes that they wanted to, but it made some changes that they didn't plan on. And those changes could, they don't know what the effects would be.
So they don't even know what those changes did?
Yeah. And then there's a study that came out after that that reviewed their study and repeated their study. And they said, well, it wasn't as bad as they said it was. So, I mean, so it's kind of like back and forth of like, but who's telling the truth? Like, because a lot of people want this to work.
Of course.
So are they just kind of like, well, it wasn't that bad. You know, they're over-exaggerating the issue to keep it going. Or did they say it because it really wasn't an issue and they kind of overblew the information?
I don't think that anything that we've heard is anything close to the truth. I think that they've made more progress on this kind of technology than the public would be comfortable with hearing.
Yeah.
I mean, because they've known about this technology for so long, and they've been messing with it for so long. And the fact that they did it on a human, like that one doctor doing it on a human, I don't think he was the first one to do it. I think that he was the first one to say that he did it.
Yeah, probably.
Like, that's the line that I believe hasn't been crossed. I think that they've been messing with this for a long time.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of ethical issues. So a lot of doctors say that they're okay with editing genes that won't pass down to children.
How do they know that?
Because there's certain genes that are hereditary and certain genes that aren't.
Spontaneous.
Yeah, something like that. And so they're like okay with these, but then if it's hereditary and it's going to propagate in generations to come, they're not so okay with it, because I guess the line is that if something did go wrong and this guy develops a crazy cancer or something, whatever, it's not going to propagate into their children. And, you know.
Yeah, and guarantee that now their kids are going to die of the same thing that this guy did.
But I mean, nobody knows, because as far as we know, I mean, these two kids is two kids.
Yeah, weren't they twins?
We're the first, you know, that we know about. And, you know, they're young. And, I mean, I guess the idea was admirable, kind of, because he basically, one of the parents has HIV, and he used the gene therapy in order to create or edit the genes so that they were resistant to HIV.
Yeah, but it wasn't even 100% correlation or causation that edit prevented the kids from getting it, because it was an uncertainty if they were going to get it or not.
Exactly.
So it was kind of like, why did you pick that one? And if you already did a bunch of stuff, why did you pick to choose to talk about that one?
Yeah.
The one that you could, you know, easily scientifically argue that you didn't have to do that edit to prevent this person from getting HIV or from developing it. But also, you could have honked something else up that you can't even imagine.
Yeah.
And at one point, does all this editing, like, isn't our DNA, like, really similar to a potato?
We're similar to a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So at what point does all this editing no longer make us human and make us more of a potato? Do you know what I mean? Like, what if in their editing, you know, when you're, like, in Word and you're editing stuff and you accidentally delete a line you didn't mean to delete, but you can't get it back? What happens when that happens and now that human is now a potato? It is wildly unethical to do that.
I don't know. I mean, I'm for it as far as certain things, I think, and other things. Like, I wouldn't want people to just, like, designer babies, right? That's one of the things that people are excited about. But in this case, let's say you were paralyzed, right? And they could go in and they could edit a couple genes that would turn those, let's say they just like crank them so that it's like, it goes to like fetus level and say it's like, oh, I need to generate, you know,
spinal column
cells and nerve endings and et cetera. And
right.
it boosts your body's ability to then rebuild that structure.
But what I just don't think that any of those things exist in a vacuum. I think that it's part of something and connected to something else. What does editing this one line of code do to the entire program? Like, we don't know. I mean, it could successfully, for some reason, turn on the body's ability to rebuild these cells that are damaged mm-hmm. or non-existent. But what else did it turn on? What did it turn off? What's the offset? I feel like this is a dual entry accounting thing where this one thing happened, but you need a contra something to happen.
This is how vampires are made. Someone is going to be like, you know what? I want to live forever. Just turn everything up to 11. Let my cells regenerate daily. I'm going to look awesome. But they're going to have to feed on blood.
Yeah, I wonder like, what does the microbiome of a vampire look like? Like, our microbiome changes as we get older, which is why our cells develop and turn into different things, right? So say you're a vampire.
Okay.
And and they're living, technically, right? They say that they're undead, but if they were truly undead, they wouldn't need to eat. So they're kind of living.
Yeah.
So, which I guess undead means living? Anyway. So they're consuming things, and they're part of this environment, and every single living thing is also part other living things. Like, we've got all of our bugs that make us, mm-hmm. We're more bugs than us, but for some reason we claim ownership over all of it.
Yeah.
So we have our microbiome, let's say like our gut bacteria, and you've got a vampire who consumes only blood, mm-hmm. platelets, maybe a little bit of skin in the process, but that's like an accident. That's like eating a little bit of gristle when you're going for the chicken.
Yeah.
But you're basically just consuming blood. So what does your microbiome look like? Water bears.
They are just full of water bears.
Well, that solves that.
Yeah.
Well done. And they can exist anywhere. So because they live forever, the vampire lives forever.
Yeah.
That's how they do it.
That's how they do it.
So why don't you just take a suppository filled with water bears and shove them up your ass and then make you a vampire and now you live forever. That's how this works.
We have solved the vampire problem. It's suppositories laced with water bears. It goes back to Big Pharma.
They don't want that to be the case, though, because if all of our microbiome is only water bears, then a lot of the diseases that our funky microbiome causes won't exist. So Big Pharma won't exist. They're not going to let that happen. It's a conspiracy.
Man.
They know about the water bears. When the aliens come, we're going to need to talk about this.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure they already know. If they've figured out interstellar travel and were able to locate us, a tiny speck in the span of the universe, they found us.
To be fair, we're kind of like the Milky Way's radio station. I mean, we're just sending shit out into the universe for fun.
Well, we're doing it hoping that someone will hear us. And we do make, you know, a trip around. So, I mean, we're essentially broadcasting to nearly every corner of the cosmos, right?
Yeah.
Although, because of frequencies, once you go far enough away, the blips that they catch, we are going to have gaps. So if there's a planet that is in one of those gaps, then they're not going to hear
it. It's going to sound like when, like in the 90s when you had a CD player in your car and it was scratched and you stuck it in there.
Yeah.
And it would go, doot, doot.
They won't hear anything at all.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the aliens know about that. They'll know how to get here.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to see. I mean, I'm excited to see what kind of, like, flora and fauna they have and share with us that kills us instantly. That'll be enjoyable for a minute. And then the planet is theirs. And then they're probably going to die because our flora and fauna is going to destroy them.
Maybe we'll just destroy each other.
We will. And hopefully there's a third form of life out there somewhere who can show up and be like, whoa, what happened?
Water bears.
They're the only ones. It's their master plan. Them and the vampires, they're going to take over the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, vampires and water bears are like the empire. And that's it.
Yeah.
The water bear strikes back. Anyway. What just happened?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think that's it for the time traveler guy. So, I mean, I didn't watch the documentary. I read an article about the documentary, but apparently you can find it on YouTube. I'm sure if you search like Noah the time traveler, he gave some other insights into the future.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the aliens bring the time traveling technology in 2028, which I guess would make sense because if you're going to do interstellar travel, wouldn't you also want to be able to make it as short as possible? So if you can time travel.
But time is a construct that we have created. How can you time travel if it you're traveling in magic imagination land? It doesn't exist.
But time is the fourth dimension. So space-time exists.
Space-time exists, and time can vary depending on how fast you're moving through space.
Yeah.
But as far as a second ago was a second ago and now is now, the fact that that was 2 seconds ago now and now 3 seconds ago, that's
like
our construct. What's happening now is happening now. You're watching what's happening now.
What happened to then?
We passed it. But we made it up. Time as we know it as marching is a made-up construct.
Yes.
And your made-up construct differs from the made-up construct of someone traveling closer to the speed of light than we are. That's it.
Yeah.
It's a difference of two idiots trying to make sense of the world around them. They don't have to be the same. They could be different from one idiot to the other, but it's still made up.
So you think time travel is impossible because time doesn't exist?
Yes! Our concept of time is for our own sake. That's it.
So this is interesting. It's like an interesting look into your psyche. So if time doesn't exist, I really am 25 still.
You're whatever you want. I mean, you will progress through a life cycle. A life cycle still exists, but the concept of your life cycle lasting 85 years is made up. So your existence from yesterday through tomorrow still encompasses a length of passage of our consciousness because we are able to be aware of what's around us.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that we're calling it 2 days is bullshit. We're only doing that for us.
So is time consciousness?
The ability to observe time and make it up and even bother is only in anything that can observe. A rock doesn't give a shit what time it is. It won't yesterday and it won't tomorrow. It just exists. It exists as how it is. It's only that he doesn't have the curse of consciousness,
mm-hmm,
of having to worry about what happened yesterday and worry about what happened tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Those are only our that makes us insane. Like existence itself, consciousness itself is insanity.
Cool.
I think about this a lot.
Oh my god, consciousness is insanity.
Consciousness is a curse.
You think?
Yes.
Or is it? Okay, so how about this? What if consciousness doesn't exist and we are living in a simulation? And the reason why time exists is because computers work within a time frame.
Okay.
And so the only reason that we think we invented time is because we're in this computer simulation, but really the computer simulation is running at a certain time. You know what I mean?
It's telling you that, you know, what an hour is, what a day,
yeah,
is. But then am I allowed to ask who wrote it? Who built the machine? What's the construct of time to that person, to that being? Mm-hmm. Was it another, like, because I mean, I feel like the idea of consciousness is an accident. And what we understand about the world and how life developed and what it developed from and how it decided to just start shooting energy from one cell to another cell. And then that cell just turned into more and more cells. And suddenly the energy that's shooting from one to another, we decided to start considering it a thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that seems like all of like emotion and consciousness is an accident.
Yeah.
I mean, so the concepts and the constructs that we develop because of that consciousness is made up.
But that's, I mean, the thing is, like, that's interesting about life in general. Like, if you think, you know, there's people that debate, do aliens exist? Are there other life forms out there, whether it's animal form, conscious, intelligent beings, whatever. Mm-hmm. But if it happened here on Earth and all the, you know, they've found that when they look at asteroids and they look at what's in them, pretty much every asteroid that's ever hit the planet has had most of the building blocks needed to start life.
Yeah.
So that means that any other planet that's had an asteroid hit it and happens to have the other couple ingredients that needs to combine those things to start some sort of life happening, mm-hmm, should have life on it, whether it's bacterial, viral, you know, animal, plant, like, mm-hmm, whatever, like, there should be something there. So that means, like, I would say most planets out there might have some kind of life.
It's possible, and it depends on, like, no one can say that the way that life developed on Earth is the only way that life can develop ever. Yeah. Like, there's, what do they call them, extremophiles?
Water bears.
Water bears are an extremophile, like things that develop in a place where, you know, just because a tender little human couldn't grow there, then nothing can grow there. Like, we know that that's bullshit. But if life also developed in a way like they had their own primordial ooze and their own mitochondria that turned into multicell organisms, you know, in whom more multicell things turned into organs and then they got more complex and then suddenly brainstems were, like, if they went through their own process of, mm-hmm, how, like, trial and error of different molecules bonding with other molecules at basically what is random, you know, decided to find another path into existence. Super cool. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. If they ever develop consciousness, it's an accident. That's it.
So what do you think kicked off the consciousness in humans? Like, what event? Like, because at some point back in history, we were basically an ape of some kind.
Sure, just getting along.
Yeah, chilling out. And then something happened where at some point we were just like, fuck.
Like, suddenly, I'm alive. Suddenly, like, we became self-aware.
Yeah, like, what happened there?
Dude, that's when shit hit the fan.
I know,
like,
right?
I was all downhill from
And then
there.
We're like, oh, these fuckers don't have a clue. I can rule this planet.
Yeah. And I am developing this bizarre sense of importance. Like, you're, because you can think means you're more important than this other thing, where you're not even sure if they can think or not, but you know you can think, and that makes you the most important thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know when that happened.
And then the other thing is, are there other animals on this planet that have developed consciousness?
But they haven't developed speech.
Yeah.
Or maybe they haven't developed some kind of way to, you know, because of either speech or communication, they haven't been able to work with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they're by nature loners, like they don't travel in packs like we do.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah, I mean, it just seems like such an incredible fluke. I don't think it helps anybody. It makes getting through that daily existence, which is to, you know, live till the next day, like any other, like, that's the thing, like, with evolution or whatever, you know, your goal is to pass on your genes, live long enough to make sure those genes, you know, survive and thrive, and then, you know, stay alive as long as you can, and that's it. When you're done, you're done. That's how it has been. But for some reason, in humans, we attach all of these extra electrical signals in our mind that we translate into emotions, and then we start, the complexity of it is now we're taking those emotions and we're projecting them onto other humans,
mm-hmm,
and dogs and, you know, everything around us. We anthropomorphize everything. And
thanks, Disney.
Yeah. Ooh. But it's also a coping mechanism. But the what gets me is the fact that we even have to cope. That's the curse.
That's the curse, is that
that's
we have to
the
cope?
Curse of existence, is for some reason we feel like we need to give a fuck, and we don't. We made that up. It's really hard to have that kind of existence where, and like psychology is fascinating because it's that study of why are these synapses causing these chemical, you know, this whole line of thing happening to a human, a person, and it gets turned into thoughts and emotions and you know, crying and eating everything you can find and, you know, drinking yourself under the table. Like, these are all symptoms of just a mass of molecules that happen to be stuck together in a certain way, who happen to be talking to each other through electricity in a certain way, mm-hmm. that we decided to translate into a certain something.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. But it's really hard to exist with that constant train of thought going in your mind because, like, you know how hard it is to file paperwork when you're thinking of that? You're like, oh my God, why? This is so stupid.
None of this matters.
None of this matters. And like, you hear me say that a lot. And that, like, the fact that I truly think that nothing matters does not stop me from loving you. Does not stop me from loving Xander or loving my mom. You know, like, the fact that I am a human with all of those firings off in the brain still exists. And I'm still, like, I still embrace that. So I'm not going to, like, cut off all my ties to society because I'm upset about how our brains developed. Uh-huh. Like, that's not fair. I still care about humans because I'm a human. I'm a member of the species, and we have emotional connections to each other. But that doesn't stop me from really thinking sometimes, like, what is happening? When did we go from soup to needing a tax advisor?
That's quite a leap.
It is. Isn't it amazing? It is a huge leap.
Yesterday I was soup. Today I'm using TurboTax.
It's like, today I need to file my fucking taxes. It's wild. And what we've developed and, like, looking at things where, like, a city in itself, I will go on Google Maps and I will stare at New York. I will stare at awe. Because these creatures for, you know, hundreds and thousands and ten thousands of years have been building shit out of the earth from whence that we came from.
Yeah.
We were once part of it. The molecules that are in the earth were next door to the molecules that were once, that, you know, over time became our brains. And we took that earth and we decided to mix it with a little bit of water and swirl it around and then pour it into a box and, like, oh, I made a foundation. That's cool. You know, and, like, and then we built things like New York, mm-hmm. which is just nothing but, you know, someone's idea and ability to manipulate the very earth that we live on and in, yeah. into skyscrapers and one of the coolest places in the world.
We're inventing stuff that doesn't even exist in the earth. Like,
we're making up molecules that never, like plastic.
Yeah.
And that's been going on for a long time. Yeah, it's like
crazy. We're inventing new shit.
It's awesome and it's fascinating. But I mean, I marvel at the fact that, like, we're only on the planet for so long, but the evidence, the leftovers, the trail of destruction or whatever it is of man living here and being able to and having those stupid synapses that go on in their brains,
yeah.
made a place like New York, like, that you can look at from above because some other pile of neurons with electrical things talking to each other thought of a satellite to look down on a place like New York. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just freaking amazing. All of this because some idiot says he can time travel.
Yeah, I think I broke you.
No, dude, I think about this stuff constantly. And it might be a symptom of depression. I'm not entirely sure. I know that's something that I battle. But, like, it's not even as simple as that. Like, I can't even easily just say, oh, that's the depression. That's the existentialism. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like it's more encompassing than that. But I don't know. It also makes life feel more precious because it is so random and unique and bizarre and genuinely uncomfortable that it makes me want to do more stuff with the consciousness that I do have while I have it. Because someday, like we all do, we're going to have that feeling of falling asleep, but we're never going to wake up.
Yeah.
And then your chance is done. And, you know, what you believe happens after that, that's all you. I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, you only have so many synapses that your brain's going to fire off.
I think our consciousness is transferred into water bears.
They are truly the owners of our world. When the second Big Bang happens, it's just going to be all water bears. So yeah, that got weird. Did you have anything real that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think that was pretty much it. That's a fun conversation.
Yeah, well, that, I mean...
So, okay, here's a question.
Okay.
Where, like, whenever, let's say, I can't even think how old the oldest, like, quote-unquote human bones are. But let's say whenever we became conscious, right? Mm-hmm. Take that amount of time from now and just flop it to the future, right? So let's say if it was a million years ago, where do you think we'll be in a million years?
I don't know. So much can happen in evolution. Maybe the mass that makes us will wise up and realize that consciousness was a terrible, terrible idea. And realize that it wasn't any good for itself. It was self-destructive. It prevented it from actually evolving. That it created danger. It was a... You create danger for your own kind. Consciousness makes one human want to kill another one. How does that benefit your species?
But it also makes you want to save other ones. Sometimes, so it's like...
It is a bit of both, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'm in, but there's a difference between... like consciousness and self-awareness. I think maybe I'm thinking of there's a difference between sentience and self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Because a plant is technically sentient because it can sense the world around it.
Yes.
But and then conscious is consciousness, self-awareness. Can we call them the same thing?
I don't know
because a dog can be unconscious or conscious. So conscious is just alive. Where, like, if you smack it hard enough, it will become unconscious. You smack it even harder, it will become not existent. So, like, self-awareness. Like, what evolutionary purpose did self-awareness grant humans? And will nature decide that that trait is valuable in its continued existence?
Mm-hmm.
So is there not a chance that consciousness will be evolutionarily eliminated from humans?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
I've never thought about that. That's a place I've never gone.
Will we evolve ourselves out of self-awareness?
Yes.
Well, maybe, because what if we put ourselves into a simulation? I mean, they're already talking about being able to transfer your consciousness into a computer, being able to hook you up in a way that basically it hijacks your eyesight and you can see what they want you to see. So I wonder, like, would if we did that, like, let's say a lot of people went into the Oasis and they preferred to live there than in real life because they could be whatever they want to be.
Sure.
If that trend continued long enough, would you be self-aware anymore or would you even know who you really are?
That's a really good question. But then to upload one's consciousness... Going back to one of the points I ranted on about before, consciousness is almost like an accident. It's something that we are interpreting our own brain's firings to be.
Yeah.
So once you take those brain firings, like mirror them exactly, say, you know, they went into your brain and carbon copied everything, every single synapse.
The computers that they use, that's what they do, they map your brain and then every little synapsis or whatever and every connection is mapped. And the computer, that's how the computer is laid out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's basically a silicone replication of your brain.
So then...
With a hard drive.
So then now with all of that, you get into an interesting topic because now you're starting to define what is self, because now you're taking those neurons and those synapses and everything essentially out of context, and you're feeding them to something else, and now that something else has to now interpret what all of those things are. So it's kind of like having the right driver for your sound card. Your sound card is just a sound card, mm-hmm. unless you have the right driver for your hard drive to be able to read that sound card. So if you take your sound card out of your brain and put it into this other hard drive, does it also come with that driver? Or what is the driver? What is the thing that tells whatever is perceiving
mm-hmm.
that those electrical impulses together mean that you are pissed off because you just stubbed your toe?
Well, you're a computer, so you don't have toes. But I get where you're going. I wonder if they'd have some kind of sensory inputs, because, like, thinking about memories, right? You can have memories that are triggered by sight, by smell, by sound, and all that. So would you be able to access memories that require sensory input, or would those just kind of go away?
And also, would the location to where you uploaded be as flawed as the jelly currently housing all those electrical impulses in your brain? Because our brains aren't perfect. They you know, because of their plastic nature, things get lost. You know, things that we record in a chunk that's memory, it's not like we're holding a Polaroid. It's a set of impulses that we interpret as a memory.
Yeah.
But again, it's that interpretation. So if you're trying to, like, upload memories to a hard drive, do they exist just as ones and zeros until they go back into your very own mind? Because it's your memory. You know how you have, you know, the encryption code to those firings. But does anybody else, and can you also upload that encryption code? Or is that something that you have, that you made up? Do you know what I mean?
I get where you're going. So I don't know exactly how that part works. Like,
I think that's the issue.
Yeah, like,
does it have to go back into your memory? Like, back to you specifically?
Well, no,
for it to work?
The idea is you're dead. But your mind has been preserved on this computer. And so whatever you are exists within this computer.
Yeah. But then what about you? And you when? Because the you cellularly is not the same you that was born.
Yeah.
But somehow you are still Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the microbiome inside you, the skin cells that make you, none of them are the same. So what does make you is the way that your brain goo electrically talks to the other brain goo.
Mm-hmm.
Specific to you. Is that uploadable?
I assume so.
The way that your brain goo, which is different brain goo than it was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, isn't the longest rotation of cells 8 years?
Something like that, yeah.
So, yeah. So, essentially, 10 years ago, you are a completely different organism.
Yeah.
But you have memories from when you were a child.
Mm-hmm.
So, those electrical impulses carried on probably, like, if, like, there's 40, I know you have more than 40, if there's like 40 brain cells in, you know, wherever cortex holds your memories, 20 of them are actively holding the memory at any given time, and then as ones die, the new one that's born gets a little bit of that memory. So,
well,
like, it always,
yeah, here's the interesting thing is the cells in the hippocampus where your memories are stored, they do regenerate. However, they regenerate hereditarily, which is the only place in your body where that happens, as far as I can remember.
So it regenerates with the same information
yes.
as the predecessor.
Yes.
So that's the information.
So, but here's the interesting thing is it updates as well. So every time you have a memory, you don't really remember it exactly the way it happened.
Yeah.
So your memory is created, and let's just say it's an 8, right? And then you think about it 5 years later, and it's a 7. And then that cell dies, and then this one comes, and it's a 7. And then you think about that memory again, and it's a 6. And this one updates to a 6, and then it dies, mm-hmm. and it's replaced with a 6. And
because it just keeps going like that. And it doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's influenced by stories that you hear and other memories that you're recording. So it's mm-hmm. not perfect, and it's not isolated.
But it's interesting that they update and they pass down the information.
So there is data to be preserved and identified, but yeah. it's not clean data.
And that's one of the theories on what's happening when you're dreaming is it's cells recording. Passing information.
Yeah.
So it's memories that are being passed to new cells, and you're having those memories in mm-hmm. order to create cells.
Mm-hmm.
But and they haven't been able to prove it.
It's fascinating. That desperate need to catalog and identify mm-hmm. our surroundings. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow, that got really deep.
It's the end of the year. Congratulations, guys.
It's also the end of the world. Salud. But see, like, in a way, as truly terrifying as those kinds of thoughts and those trains of thoughts are, in a way, it's a little bit comforting, especially in times of global turmoil, because I'm sure a psychologist would say that you're disassociating and it's unhealthy, and I would tend to agree. But you are, in a way, distancing yourself from perceived danger because in the very end, who the fuck cares?
Yeah.
But, you know, and not a safe place to exist, truly, because if, as a species, if we did that, we would not survive. And, you know, I see that. But it's sometimes a safer place to go, even if it's only for a weekend retreat, to just not think about any man-made problems at all. And just think of yourself as a speck floating in the universe.
Yeah. I think that's why going camping or being out hiking or climbing a mountain or something is so rejuvenating, because you get away from all those
things. It truly is. Yeah, it makes you feel almost like you're in your natural state.
Yeah.
Like that's where the things that you're supposed to worry about, walking your dog into a rattlesnake. that's something we should be worrying about.
Looking out
about.
For mountain lions Looking and out bears for mountain lions. And...
genuine survival issues.
Yeah.
Like, that is engaging. That is fun. That's survival. You know, gridlock traffic is not survival. I don't think that's... I mean, if this was granted to us, consciousness, by somebody else...
Let's say ancient aliens, because that's fun.
Yeah, it sure is.
The ancient aliens came down and they said, hey, these guys are pretty cool. Let's make them self-aware.
Yeah.
These are cool cats.
It would be great. But what a colossal waste being stuck in traffic.
Well, that's why they're trying to come back in 2028, because they're like, look at these fuckers. They didn't learn anything.
And like, they did that all wrong. What happened? The great curse.
Yeah.
Our great curse. It's beautiful. I mean, it's a beautiful curse. It's robust and complex. And, you know, the fact that you can even look in on itself mm-hmm. is poetic and is gorgeous. But, man, is it a thing?
Well, like all great works of art and literature, the Bible blames the woman for our consciousness.
That's fine.
So, you know, maybe if you follow the ancient alien theory, they brought us on a ship and
the woman said, are you going the right way?
No, and someone put on a helmet and data downloaded, and that just like fucked us.
Oh man.
Cause they were just, you know, apes running around the spaceship. And they're like, hey, this is awesome.
It's like little Gunter finding the hat and putting it on his head. He goes, the hat goes on the head. It's so obvious now.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay.
We should all be like Gunter. Really.
Yeah, we should.
Cherry picking our cognition.
All right. I think that's it. I think we have depressed everybody enough for the holidays.
No, I don't want it to be depressing. I want it to be.
All right.
Keep things
final,
in perspective.
Final uplifting thought from Veronica.
We as humans, yes, you can see it as cursed. Yes, you can see it as stuck. And, you know, yes, you could see it as you're trapped in this cage of consciousness and giving a shit about what other people think of you. Like, that matters. But as part of that, you're part of a society and part of a family unit, whether it's chosen or biological, that cares that you're breathing. Those are the organisms that deserve your attention and deserve your love and deserve your time. So, yes, we're cursed, but make the best of the time that you have, of the neurons that you have that are talking to each other. Use that to serve the other organisms on this planet that care that you're alive.
That's a good one.
All right.
Yeah, that's nice.
Thank you. That one I have thought a lot about.
Anything else to plug?
No, man. Just
Ninja Warrior is coming up.
Ninja Warrior is coming up. I'm not auditioning this year. With the shoulder injury, time and focus on training was not existent, so that's not happening. But we've got nationals coming up in February.
Yeah,
and then in preparation. Oh, we have not talked at all about this, and I'm a little scared of it. About the Whole 30 challenge.
Oh.
It's not a challenge. Some people call it that, but I think that's putting too much pressure on yourself. But starting January 1st, it's not a New Year's resolution. I dislike those. But it is basically like a factory reset on your insides. It's removing the foods that are generally known to cause inflammation and allergic reactions and just don't play well with others.
Yeah.
They don't play well. Microbiome seems to be the theme of this podcast. So they just don't play well with your own microbiome. So what the idea is to take out all of those things, mm-hmm. and then exist for 30 days in that state and then reintroduce stuff and see how it treats you.
Yeah.
Because some people are cool with goat cheese. Other people feel like they're going to explode when they eat goat cheese.
Well, you know, there's an option for that.
Hmm.
If you feel like you're going to explode when you eat goat cheese, you just find somebody who doesn't explode when they eat goat cheese. You take the poop and you shove it up.
Yes! Science!
And you just get some of their microbiome up in you.
But who knows what else they've given you. Like, they could also have the microbiome that makes them want to eat four pizzas every day.
But that's a thing that science, like, doctors really do that.
They
like,
do.
There are certain conditions where they are like, you know what, this would be beneficial for you. I think we should stick some poop in you.
They fecal transplants.
Yeah.
And it's, again, microbiome. The us that's more us than us.
Yes.
Truly.
There are more bacteria in your body, mm-hmm. than cells.
There are more foreign bodies that
so
make up your cells than
we are just a
cells.
Gooey body full of bacteria.
That's another thing that I think is hilarious, that we have consciousness. We're claiming it as our own. How do we know that it isn't the microbiome's consciousness that we have adopted?
So it's just like, it's like in Men in Black where it's that tiny little guy in the body and he's like puppeting
yes!
it.
Yes! That the body thinks he's the king of the universe, but really it's the guy inside.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, in our world, anything's possible.
Yeah. I want my face to open up and there'd be like a little bacteria in there.
He's like, hey guys. Him and his bazillion friends are the ones operating all the controls.
That's why I always hear samba music.
My father came over on the sandwich.
Oh, man.
Anyway, so yeah, the Whole 30 thing's going to happen. That'll be joined by intermittent fasting, which we've done. I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
And then I found this really cool new way of, it's not new, it's new to me, of stretching called resistance stretching. So if you'd like to know more about that, if anyone is still listening to this, my God, I salute you. because this was a journey. It was a journey for everybody. Casey and I have known each other for a very long time, and I think there's stuff that he learned about me tonight that is, I'm a little genuinely concerned that I even let all of that out, but you know, I trust you guys and everyone, so hopefully that didn't scare off anybody. Send them off to go live alone in the forest or anything like that.
It's like that movie, no, the book. There was a book that I read. I don't remember the title, but it was when I was in high school. And it was like mandatory reading. It was about this kid in New York who had a peregrine falcon pet.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided he was going to run away from home. So he took his falcon and he found a tree that was hollowed out on the inside and built himself a little house. And then the falcon would help him hunt. And he just lived in the forest in New York.
Whoa.
I know. And that was like a mandatory reading thing when I was in high school. And I don't remember the name of it, but it was crazy story.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
My goodness. Cool. All right. Well, that's our book of the month. Let's find the name of it and we'll put it in the show notes. And and that's the book for January, book club members. Yeah, I think that's everything really that's new. We didn't even talk about what kind of Christmas we had. We had a great Christmas, guys. We'll leave it at that.
We hope you had a great Christmas, too.
We really do.
And we hope you have an awesome new year.
Be safe. Have fun. Thanks for sticking around and being part of the listener base.
Yeah.
We have truly no reason to do this other than you guys.
I do have news.
Oh!
Murder Co. reopens next month, I think.
In the same location? New location.
Same location.
Okay.
But apparently John Cook sold it to another person who wanted to do escape rooms. And because John was so busy with big scale productions like Queen Mary and all the other stuff,
mm-hmm.
and he couldn't devote enough time to Murder Co., he decided to sell it to him. So,
well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's going to be the same show, if they're updating it, what's going on, but yeah.
I'm glad
it's
going to
be reopening.
John Cook has been a model of, you want something, go get it. I mean, he's with his production company and the music, and like I see his posts, like he is involved in so many things.
Yeah,
it's a joy to watch
mm-hmm.
and see what he's up to.
Now, if only Haunted Attraction can give him a big enough budget to actually do something really awesome.
In time, he's on his way. I believe that there's a spot for him.
Yeah,
and there's an investor out there just waiting for the right moment. At least we can hope.
Maybe he could take over. I could see him, if him and Ted took over Universal Studios Horror Nights.
Oh.
That would be awesome.
I thought you were going to say, watch them take over Coffin Creek and be like, forget about it.
That would be cool too, but Universal has the budget.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they could do something really awesome.
Yeah, and they've got the following.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. My God, how long have we been at it? A long time.
Awesome. We should get out of here. So that's it for us. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Tales from the Fog. You can follow Veronica on Instagram at
Veronica Voices.
You can follow the Decay Brigade YouTube page on at Decay Brigade Official, along with YouTubes and Instagrams. I think that is it.
That is it. Like and subscribe or whatever it is that you do on the social
media. Oh, yeah,
means.
And leave us a review on iTunes. That's always helpful.
It is. I think we've been, like, gaining subscribers through that just by, you know, we're coming up in some search results.
Yeah,
so
which
that's
is awesome.
We've been neat.
Hey, and this is, I mean, as of October, we're on our, is this our fourth year?
Oh, my God. Has it
something
been that long?
Something like that, yeah.
That's incredible.
I know. It's crazy, huh?
That is pretty cool. And there are some of our listeners have been there since the very beginning.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Neat.
Yeah.
And sometimes we even talk about Halloween stuff.
Sometimes. Hey, there was time travel and aliens in this episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was legit. You know what was some of my favorite stuff? I mean, it's the end of the year. We can kind of talk about, like, what are, like, end of the year type stuff. Some of the favorites that we've gotten are, like, weird, like, please call out the bullshit on things that our listeners will send into us.
Yeah.
Like, I love that because I love Like, the only reason they send it is so that they can hear us tear it to shreds.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's great, because it's entertaining for us, for sure, and yeah. It's entertaining for somebody, you know?
That's fun.
Like, I love that. So if you've got more of things that you want, you know, mostly me, because I have fun debunking things. I don't know why. I just like to tear apart the world.
Things that you have a hard time tearing apart.
That is fun, too, and I like that because I like a challenge.
I
like a little gristle with my chicken.
All right, we're out of here. Until next time, guys. See you in the fog.
Bye, guys.
Bye.